Well, first of all, I gotta say
how much I love being back here. It's been a while.
And been in far-flung places, and I wish I could speak with that Scottish accent, but you know what? I there's too much Okie and Texas in me, and it just kept shoving the Scottish accent out.
And bless their hearts, they struggled. People asked me, did you understand the Scottish people as you lived them? I said, well, of course I did. It was their problem trying to understand me.
And so I worked really hard at that.
But oh, what a great time, and what a great opportunity now to be back and to reconnect.
And White Rock Presbyterian Church has long been a friend and a familiar place. And I'm delighted to get to be with you today. Today's a little bit of a confessional sermon. I'm just gonna go ahead and admit it. I struggled with this because I'm just gonna say this. So I was gone for a little over a year, and I feel like the country that I came home to is a little bit not the same that the country I left. It just feels that way. And so I find myself struggling and trying to get my feet sort of back on the ground and getting reoriented to where are we today? What's going on? Where am I? What's happened? Or what is happening? Or what's happening in this place? As I said, it's a bit more confessional, if you will, this message today. And this particular text just comes home to me so routinely. Well, I have to tell you, when I was in college, which was now a long, long time ago, for a couple of summers, I was a door-to-door book salesman. And, you know, I can't tell you today why I would choose to be a door-to-door salesman. I guess it's just because the opportunity presented itself and somebody said, oh, you can make a lot of money and help you pay for school. And I thought, well, okay, that's good motive enough. So I went to the little week-long sales school, and there I was trained to say, why, good morning, Ms. Jones. I'm glad to see you. I've been out in the neighborhood talking to all the good church folks, and they're really excited about something, and I've been showing everybody, and I know you're going to be excited to see this too. I can still do that. After a long time, and I went from door to door, and that spiel just came out, and I was in Memphis, Tennessee for a while. Actually, I was starting out in Arkansas, but I love to tell that story too, because that was the first day we were on the job. I actually knocked on somebody's door. The guy let me in. I gave him the whole pitch. And then I was closing for the sale. I thought, oh, this is amazing. People are just so interested. This is going to be my first sale. And he stood up as I was closing for the sale. He said, wait just a moment. I'll be right back. And then he came and said, I just made a phone call, and a squad car will be coming to take you downtown. I said, excuse me? And he said, well, we have a Green River Ordinance, and you're inside the city limits, and we don't allow door-to-door selling. So my first day of door-to-door selling, I ended up in jail. So it was just a great experience. So I like to tell people that, yeah, I too have a criminal record, so I identify with lots of places. But I remember I got moved from there to Memphis, and then later I got moved down to Mississippi. And in Mississippi, it was largely a black community, communities where we were, which was not only altogether different, but really a lot of fun, because I just discovered how welcoming and warm and open and forthright and honest folks could be in those areas. So I was at this particular house. It was late in the day. I don't know how many doors I had knocked down, how many times I'd say, hi, Ms. And actually what you learn to do is you look on the mailbox, or you look to see if you can get some clue as to what this person's name might be, or you, at the door before, you go, oh, by the way, I'm going to your next door neighbor, Ms. Jones. Yeah, Ms. Jones. And just see if she might be. So then you go to the door and you say, why, good afternoon, Ms. Jones. I've just been out in the neighborhood talking to all the good church folks, and they're really excited about what I've been showing them. I know you're going to be excited to see it as well. May I have a few moments of your time just to let you see what everybody's so excited about? And this lovely lady, kind of standing over me, she was a bit taller than I was, as I recall. She looks at him and she says, boy, I'm pretty sure from the looks of you, you don't know nothing. I've also never forgotten that. It was kind of a good reminder. Well, the world seems to kind of gone crazy. Have you noticed? There are wars and rumors of war, earthquakes, plagues, and famines. The usual. We've had those forever. They are bad enough, and they break our hearts and scare us and worry us. But our culture, it seems, has managed to go way beyond the usual bad stuff, if I may say. Today, a lot of people are saying a lot of things. And from the looks of it, some of the loudest and most influential of them don't seem to know nothing. Just from observing from the outside and looking in. Now, there are still a lot of good people. Gracious, generous, kind. This very morning, I got a text from a friend who lives on the other side of the country who had been out with a bunch of college kids yesterday doing acts of service. And she sent me some pictures. And I took a look at those and I thought, yay! There are kids, there are people doing good stuff. But you know what the problem is? They don't get a lot of press. They don't get a whole lot paid attention to them. The folks who get on the news are generally angry, vindictive, socially and morally dysfunctional. Social media is rife with harsh and ugly language, dehumanizing folks who are different from me, different from you, critical, vengeful, vindictive. And that was also just this morning. And it seems like truth is up for grabs, however you would like to define it today. And you really can't disagree with people anymore. You know, you disagree with someone, and there's no civil discourse. There's such polarization. There's such alternate reality thinking is what I call it. It seems like, just like you're someplace else. And a victim mentality that, to some degree, when you disagree, you become the enemy, and you are to be crushed, or to use the word owned by the other side, whatever the other side is. And you know, here's the confessional part. You know what my problem is? I want to strike back. My mom used to tell me that. You need to settle down. You got a temper, and it's going to get the better of you, and it's probably going to get you in trouble. You know, she was right way more than once. So I spent the better part of 7 decades trying to get that under control. But see, here's the point. I feel like I'm the victim, and I want to get even, or I want to say something. I've written more emails than you can imagine, telling people in high places and other places just what I think of their actions. Fortunately, I have not sent most of them. A few of them I'm hanging on to because they were so good. But I have a rule. Don't send an email after dark. That's just a good rule, a good principle for life. Don't send an email after dark because you'll say things you wish you hadn't. You read it in the morning and go, oh, that was a little too much. If you send them after dark, you may not respect yourself in the morning. So I've kind of learned, you know, I can write that stuff, but no, don't wait to send it. A lot of them are still in the draft box. Okay, I'll probably after today, I'll go delete them all. But it still churns inside. That's the problem. I range from rage to deep sadness. And the sense of injustice and unnecessary damage and destruction, fear for my friends, fear for my grandbabies. If friends say to me, calm down, it will pass, the pendulum will swing to the other side. And I look around and I wonder, where are we going and what is this handbasket all about? I'll let you think about that for a minute. Well, here's the deal, I confess. It brings out the worst in me. If I pay too much attention to what's going on, it brings the base, coarse, dangerous, vicious behavior, social media sewer, and I want to respond in kind and not kindly. I'm not a really very good example of being a Christian. I'll just go ahead and tell you that. I think I know a few things about it, but I struggle with this every day, and I read the news, and I talk to relatives and friends, and I look at churches and church people, and I get upset with what's going on. I get angry, and I want to lash out and say harsh things, and I want to shake people and say, wake up. But then I realize I'm no better, I'm no smarter, I'm no wiser than anyone else. I'm broken and in disarray, just like the world. And life doesn't seem safe. Somehow, it feels like it's shrunk down to this tiny little place that's not safe. And I can't find that place of contentment and calm that should be there. I know I should stop reading the news feeds. That would help a lot. But there must be something more. There must be something more for people who choose to be people of God. People who choose to say, I want to do this differently. There must be something more. Where do we find the path? So, well, we do what Christians always do, or always should do. We go to the book. That was a wake-up call.
We go to the book, right? That's what we do.
We just have gone to the book. Now, Jesus didn't have a very easy world in which to live. In spite of all the beautiful scenes that I see at Christmas, on all the Christmas cards, and how wonderful and lovely it is, the fact is, he was mostly dealing his whole life with chaotic crowds and doofus disciples and scheming Sadducees and pompous Pharisees, and he healed the sick and fed multitudes, and the religious leaders wanted to kill him. No, not easy. Risky. Exhausting. You know, you read the Gospels and you see how many times Jesus said, "I gotta get away." You ever think he said that out loud? You've heard the phrase, "peopled out." I'm just peopled out. I think Jesus got peopled out. How many times do we see him saying, "I gotta go away, guys. I'll be up in the mountains where it's kind of quiet." And you know what happened, of course. Either they followed him like, or the whole crowd came and found him. That's how it worked for him. But he did have something. He did have something that we see and we glimpse. He had calm in the storm. He had a confidence in why he was here and a confidence in his task and who he was. He had a connection with the Father. He had something that enabled him to. I read the Gospels and I say, ooh, that's. The problem here, of course, is, or I'll say the challenge, is that when I say what, then I realize, oh, then I got to do what he said. I got to be like him, I guess. And here's what he said. What he said seemed to go against everything that's in our natural human impulses, our natural way of being. And here's what he said. You can't be like the place where you have to follow me and be utterly distinct from what you see swirling. You have to do Rod Dreher in a book called A Manual for Christian Dissent. Or, no, wait, not dissent. For A Manual for Christian Dissidents. Okay? Dreher, D-R-E-H-E-R. Look that book up. Here's what Dreher says. He says, you know, we got to be careful as Christians because at some point we may think we follow Jesus, but in fact we merely admire him. I got to make sure. I got to talk to myself and say, it's not just saying, ooh, he has it all together. And I should just look at him. No, what Jesus says is you got to be like me. You got to be me in the world. You have to demonstrate something that the world doesn't understand or even necessarily want to see. You have to do that. And this text that we're looking at is so familiar, isn't it? This Matthew 5 text. Well, the Beatitudes, Warren Wiersbe called them the Beatitudes. I like that. But they've been preached on, taught, written about, studied forever. Today, we're just going to look at them again in light of where we live today. Kind of a fresh look. The New Testament and Greek scholar F.F. Bruce said this. There's no greater service that can be rendered to mankind than to rescue from obscurity these neglected moral commonplaces. These words right here. So we're gonna do what Bruce says. We're gonna rescue them from where they sit on the page and walk back through them. And perhaps we can find a reminder. Well, here's what I want to do first, because I love the message for young disciples a while ago, Joyce. And as I mentioned to you, we could have just said, that was the sermon. God bless you. Go home. And because it was right on target. Blessed. In most translations, that's the word we get. It can also be legitimately translated happy. That's actually the way it's used in much ancient Greek literature. The word makario is happy. But in our language, happy feels sort of thin. We've maybe overused it a lot, even though Jesus said in John 13, when he's washing the disciples' feet, and he says, blessed are those who see this and do this as well. Happy. You'll be happy if you wash other people's feet. In John 20, Jesus says, right after his conversation with Thomas, he says, blessed or happy are those who haven't seen this. But he uses the same word, and happy is a good way to translate that. You'll be that. But let's look a little bit closer at this word, makario. That's the first that shows up in all of these Beatitudes. The first part of that word, M-A-K, makario, indicates large. wide. Think Mac, same root for the same word, Macario. The idea behind this root is a place that's and large, open, free, stable, secure. That's the word. You might think of, because when I hear that, my mind immediately runs to the Old Testament, and the Hebrew equivalent of this word means a wide place or a large place. It's a metaphor for being delivered from tight places, from constricting places, from dangerous situations into a place of freedom and safety and blessing. In Genesis 26, we hear the old patriarch saying, "The Lord has made room for us." The psalmist, Psalms 18, says, "He has set me in a wide place, a stable and secure path for my feet." In Psalm 31, the psalmist says, "Lord, you've not yet given me over to my enemy. You have set my feet in a large place." I like that phrase. Psalm 118, "He has delivered me from distress and set me in a wide place, a large place." This is the same idea that we have in the word blessed here in the writing of Matthew. A wide, large place. Freedom versus restriction. Fulfillment, rest, safety. At least in a wide place. You know why it feels safe? Especially to those ancients? It's because they could see the enemy coming from a long ways away. They could see the dust coming. They say, "Oh, get ready. Get ready." So a wide place. An accurate translation of the text could be, "In a large, wide space are those who are humble." In a large, wide place. Ooh, I want to think about that for a moment. Translators, of course, don't like to use all those words, so they'll just give us a word, blessed or happy. One translation uses happy, the CEV does. But here's the point of Jesus' sermon. In the face of a difficult, dangerous world where it's not fun and it's so uncomfortable and you feel bound up and tied down by all the stuff that keeps coming at you, he says, take action and trust that the outcome will be a large, wide place of contentment and soul safe. I wish it were that easy, because I know me and I run to God every day. I pray Psalm 51 almost. I am a sinner and you are justified in me because I was born in sin. But David goes on in the Spirit. And don't take your presence. Don't take another. Restore to me the joy of my salvation. And sustain me with a willing spirit. And then I'll be about the business to which I hear that text resonating in my head every day, which is to a large degree what Jesus is saying right here. And we run to the text. We run to, "Jesus, here's what you said." So if I do these things, or Paul, here's what you said. If I focus on love and joy and peace, and being patient, holding up under the load, being gentle and merciful and kind, self-controlled, faithful. Or if I hear what you said to the Philippians, think on these things that are excellent and of good report and that are lovely and true. Think about these things. Oh, I recite these as prayers daily. Remake me, God. Recreate me. Help me to respond to the world not like me, but help me to respond to the world like a person who is not me. So for a moment, let's take Bruce's advice and rescue these words from obscurity. These things that Jesus says, here it is. Do these things, a person. And here they are. The person who is poor in spirit. We can walk right to the meaning of that word, who is humble, self-effacing, who has rejected arrogance utterly, who acknowledges spiritual and relies on God. I am not wise. I am not smarter. I am so utterly. This is the posture of a beggar who understands utter dependence. That person is the one to whom the door to the kingdom is open. The impediments to receiving grace are in a large, wide place will be those who empty themselves of themselves, but also are those who mourn. And most scholars say, yeah, there is a mourning for loss. There's grief over loss, death, separation, that kind of loss. But most will concur that this kind of mourning is contrition for sin, for the brokenness of my own heart and the brokenness of the world around me, and recognizing helplessness. We were reminded of that sense of helplessness and pain. And often we don't even know where to turn. And Jesus says, okay, you're in the right place. You understand that there is a brokenness and you cannot. So you learn to find there a deeper place to live. This is where you open yourself up to the work of the Holy Spirit, who is the comforter. Jesus says, that contrition for your brokenness, confess that, be open to that. And the comforter will provide comfort, forgiveness, healing, restoration to relationship. Poor in spirit, humility, those who mourn, contrition, sorrow over sin. The gentle, this is a good word, this word brautes. It's an equestrian term. So when the cowboy takes the wild stallion and finally breaks it to the bit and to the saddle, he still has an incredibly powerful animal, but it's now under control. That's the word brautes. That's the word for gentleness or meekness, power under control. It's a willingness to set aside the ability to hurt an adversary. When I look at some of those awful emails that I wrote, I think, ooh, you're pretty good with those words. You can really cut that person down. Jesus says, mm-mm, you can just delete that. And don't be so proud about your ability to hurt somebody else. Ooh. The one who takes that ability to hurt somebody else. You know, David prayed for the destruction of his enemies. Jesus did not. He showed a very different way. He was the opposite of the world's emphasis on strength and aggression and vengeance and self-building up, self-aggrandizement. Jesus says greatness is being last. Discipleship is denying yourself. Don't send that email. And he says that these folks who are here walk into this large place. They inherit the earth. That is, this person is content, not always grasping, not satisfied with what's in his hand. He has all he needs. He receives this kind of peace by abiding in Christ. So let go of the need to exercise power and then crave what is right. Crave what is right and good. That's where we find ourselves often called into the world to do something. To do something. Even if it's only one little thing. And you know the old story. Even if only it's just this starfish. It matters to this starfish. Everybody know that story? Well, the guy's walking down the beach and he's tossing starfish into the ocean. There's a million starfish washed up on the beach. He tosses them in. There's a guy walking behind him and comes up and says, what are you doing? You can't throw all the starfish back in the sea. It doesn't matter. And the guy holds it up and says, well, it matters to this starfish. Okay, but that's an old story, but everybody kind of knows that. But wait, it still makes a point. One thing, crave what is right. Live, find a way to live in conformity to what God wants. What does God want? Justice? Care for the weak and the poor? Standing against that which hurts and demeans and dismisses and disenfranchises, stand against that? Yes. Now we have the attitude with which we do that, all in these other words. But crave what is righteous. Crave what is in conformity to God and His will. Deeply desire, hunger, thirst for what is right and good. Long for what God approves. And Jesus says, you know what? You'll step into this large place where there's some contentment. You'll have a contrast to the relentless pursuit of vengeance or retaliation, or the relentless pursuit of wealth and power and luxury and celebrity. You don't need all that stuff. You don't need it. That is passing away. That is ephemeral. That is of the world. Let it go. We've made gods of the wealthy and famous. Stop that, he says. Crave what is right and good. And be merciful. Be merciful. This is actively lifting other people up. This is rejecting vindictiveness and getting even and retaliating with like retaliation. You're more inclined, if you remember the mercy you've received, you'll be more inclined to show mercy and pity and kindness, not rehearsing old hurts. Do you do this? I do this. When somebody's kind of gouged me, you know what? I may not say anything in the moment because probably I'm not quick enough to have thought of a great retort. It's later I think of it and say, oh, that's what I should have said. And then I rehearse it. And then I rehearse what was done to me. And then I rehearse what I would have said. And I get better and better and better at my retort all along the way. Merciful means, so I have to tell, don't, just stop, stop, stop. Forgive as you've been forgiven. Forgive as he forgave you. Let go of the need to get even. Father, Jesus says, forgive them. They don't know. That's a loose rendering. And you'll receive them. Be pure in heart. Be free of, this has to do with motive. And this has to do with the stuff that's in here that nobody else sees unless I let it out. Be free of hypocrisy and malice and evil intent. No hidden agenda. Let your inner thoughts align with your outer activity and the way you live in the world. Honesty, value of for truth. As hard as it is sometimes to know what is true. I heard AI mentioned earlier. You know, it's going to be harder and harder for us to discern truth. And our kids are really going to struggle with that. And our grandkids and great-grandkids are going to struggle a lot with that. What do we want to teach them? What we see right here. I tell you, in fact, I said to my granddaughter the other day, how do I know? How do I know what's true and what's not? I said, well, maybe I don't know all the answers to that. I do know this. I know this guy who said, I am the way and the truth and the life. I said, you start with him. I don't have a great answer. But start with him. Live there and then let him help you be discerning and careful and wise. But keep it simple. Stay focused on the one who says, I am the truth. Pure in heart. And then let this be the stuff that runs through your mind. I love Psalm 37. I was reading this the other day. It was actually, so I teach third and fourth grade Sunday school over at White Rock Baptist Church. That's what they let me do. I love it. I finally decided I need to be with the kids. I love that. So we were actually looking at a psalm, Psalm 37, and I said to them, you know what, you guys? The first sermon I ever preached when I was 16 years old was on Psalm 37. I still remember that. But remember what it says? Don't fret about evildoers. And then it says, trust in the Lord. Delight yourself. Dwell in him and cultivate faithfulness. Delight yourself in the Lord. He will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to him. Rest in him and cease from anger. Same stuff, isn't it? It's the same stuff. That's Psalm 37. Same stuff. So here's Jesus said. Now listen, humility, contrition, gentleness, craving what is right and good, extending mercy, watching, checking your motives, and you'll get glimpses of the divine. You'll see God and be a peacemaker. This is not merely be a nice person. Because a lot of people think I'm a nice person. Boy, do I have people. I have people. Well, I've been able to act on the outside like I'm a really nice person. I know it's on the inside. So I said that today's confession day. But here's what Jesus said. You don't want to be just a nice person, a peaceable. You want to be a person who builds. You want to be a person who helps people who are at odds with each other to find a way to seek reconciliation, to bridge divisions, to diffuse situations and language and hard feelings. This is what you want. So you would be the person that stands in the middle and says, you, can we figure out how to, can we build a bridge here? This is what the children of God do because it reflects God is the one who reconciles us to him. God is the one who built a bridge from us to him. God is the one who says, now do that and then be reconciled to me and be reconciled to one another. And finally, he says, blessed, you will find yourself walking into a large place if you understand that you will be persecuted for this. If you understand that the world doesn't want to see this. If you do the other seven things he's mentioned right here, then the world may hate you just like it hated me. Just be ready for that. Just be ready for that and be okay with that. The world might hate people who act this way because they don't want to see it. But you're not being persecuted because you're being a hateful person. You're being persecuted because you're loyal to Jesus. You decided not just to admire him, but actually to follow him. The world teaches you if you're hit, hit back. Jesus says, nope. Love your enemy. Go the extra mile. Turn the cheek. And rejoice because your reward is yet to come. Well, folks, today I will say I still don't know. I feel like I'm still just a kid just learning something. And I come back to these texts and I say, Lord, I want to walk into this large place and for people to be able to see that calm, that contentment, that calm in the storm, this wide open, unobstructed, life-giving place. And he says, okay, well, that's good. Just follow me. Just follow me. Follow my lead. Follow my lead. Let's take a few moments and reflect on those, shall we? Lord, we want to live large. Whatever that might mean, we want to live in this place of calm in the storm and contentment when things are all out of sorts and be connected with you and for people to see that. Oh God, make us and mold us and shape us to look like our Savior. Help us to be humble, repentant, gentle, seeking what is right and good, merciful, pure in our hearts, bridge builders, ready to suffer for your sake. These go against everything the world says, and that's where we want to be. Because the world is not in this large, safe place. It's in a very broken place. Help us to be the kind of people who can demonstrate that. This is our prayer. And we can take these just a few moments to reflect on this.